Okay, this is a work session on the SEPA process for the comprehensive plan update, Wednesday, 16 July.
Hello. I will start off and then turn it over to Gordy. Gordy, you and I are going to share the same mic.
Technology is good, but it's not that good.
Yes. Good morning, Commissioners. Oliver Ojiako, Clark County Community Planning Director. This morning, we are going to be discussing the SEPA process as it relates to the 2016 plan update. What we are going to be doing this morning is sharing information with the commissioners as how we are going to be moving forward, and also review or provide you update on the rural land study that staff have been working on, and then discuss briefly some issues that have come up that we want the board to see what we've done with some of those. And this morning I'm going to turn it over to Gordy Yula, is our program manager in community planning. You have Chris Cook, deputy prosecuting attorney with us, and then you have city representative, local city partners here with us, and some other folks in the audience. So let me turn it over to Gordy as others. City representative show up, we'll have them sit at the table. Yes, we'll do that. Again, Oliver Ojiako, Community Planning.
I'm Gordy Euler, Clark County Community Planning.
Chris Cook, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney.
Robert Mall, City Accounts.
Aaron Erdman, City of Battleground.
Sam Crummins, City of Battleground.
Eric Eisman, representing the Center of Richmond.
David Miller, County Commissioner.
Tom Gelsky, County Commissioner.
Ted Martin, County Commissioner.
Mark. Matt Hart, Port of Vancouver.
Tom Gelsky,
Eric Limo, SJ Engineering.
Gretchen Starkey, Friends of Clark County.
Marty Snow, Clark County.
Steve Hart, Steve Wood, Steve Law Group.
Jeff Swanson, Clark County.
Scott Mark Harris, for the RPC.
Mike Clark, with Washington State DOT.
Corey Henderson, Clark County.
Ted Burksfaller, Washington State DOT.
Commissioners, of course, I did not neglect our county administrator who is sitting next to me here.
Mark McCauley, thank you.
Thank you.
And I have our newest staff to community planning, Mark Hartman. Yes.
Well, good morning, Commissioners. This is another in a series of work sessions that we have scheduled with you to talk about the comprehensive plan and the progress we're making. As Oliver said, there are three things we want to talk about today. One is the SEPA process. SEPA stands for the State Environmental Policy Act. We'll talk a little bit about where we are with the rural lands, and we have some other issues right at the tail end that we want to bring up. So, next slide. So here's our here's what we're going to hope to accomplish today. Next slide. As you can see, sort of dark to me. This is the slide that we've put in every PowerPoint that kind of tracks our progress. And for the first time now, we'll get into the SEPA analysis and public review and comment. We'll start to check some things over there under plan development. So you'll see that probably starting in the next slide. So next slide. Again, here are the planning assumptions. These are the critical decisions and direction that you've given us with regard to how to proceed. I think at this point been decided upon, and now we need to get on with the next steps in the process. So, next slide. As I said, SEPA stands for State Environmental Policy Act. So when you use the term SEPA, that's what we mean. So, next slide. Basically, the document requires potential environmental impacts from projects and non-development projects to be reviewed. And again, depending on the size of the project, if it's significant, an environmental impact statement needs to be prepared. We have done so for both the 2004 and 2007 comprehensive plan updates, principally because we've had large additions of land to urban growth areas. So the EIS contains description of a proposal and alternatives. We'll talk more about that in a moment. Analysis of potential impacts, and then we apply any known and potential mitigation. So basically, it's not a decision-making tool. It's providing decision makers with information about what kind of decision to make. And the scoping meetings, which I'll get to in a moment, basically initiate the process, and we have those scheduled now for the last 2 weeks in August. Next slide. General CEPA process for an environmental impact statement, you do an environmental threshold determination. Basically, that's following the WACC that says, is your project going to have significant impact on the environment or not? And if it doesn't, there are some other things we can do, like a determination of non-significance, which is what we do mostly for the projects that we do. If you make a determination that you do need an EIS, we basically have a scoping process, so we request for comments on the scope of a document and through open houses, and again, those are scheduled for the end of August. We develop alternatives. I'll talk about those in a moment. We have a draft environmental impact statement. There's a hearing on that, and then a final environmental impact statement on what becomes the preferred alternative. That is, you're telling the world through the final statement what proposal that you intend to adopt. So that's kind of the process. Here are the elements that are considered in an EIS. Natural environment, built environment. I'll give you more detail on those as the time goes on. Next slide. So in 2007, an environmental impact statement was prepared, and we studied a rather large area, what we refer to as the maximum study area. And within those, from that maximum study area, the boundaries that were adopted in the 2007 comprehensive plan were established. And there have been some challenges to the 2007 plan, based on the fact that we designated a lot of agricultural land as urbanizable. And the boundary was shrunk, I think in 2009, 2010, I don't recall exactly, to the current urban growth boundaries that we have now. So Growth Management Act, that's GMA, does require a 20-year land supply. And the question, of course, is you've already asked and answered, can vacant buildable lands in the current urban growth areas accommodate population and employment? And those are the conversations we've had previously about how much vacant buildable land is and the assumptions that go into that. Because the 2007 EIS covered such a large area and the impacts that were laid out in the 2007 EIS didn't happen because of the economic recession, what we're proposing to do is not do an EIS, but rather a supplemental EIS and readopt the 2007 EIS as a base document. This cuts down considerably on process. We'll use the analysis that was done in 2005, 2006 when the EIS was prepared, and prepare a supplemental to that to discuss any additional things that you want us to go forward with in this comp plan update. So we're not proposing to do a full EIS process, but just a supplemental. And we have a request for proposal out currently for a consultant to prepare the supplemental EIS. RFP process closes tomorrow. So SEIS, draft, and final. So a little different because we're not expanding the boundary significantly because we studied such a large area in 2007. We're proposing just to supplement the work that was done then rather than start again. So questions on that?
Yeah, can you provide us a copy of the request for proposal for that?
Yes. Let me make a note of that. Next slide. Yes, sir.
I met with the city manager in Battleground and the vice manager yesterday. They had some concerns that maybe the communication has not been too good between them and what's going on with this process. And I'm wondering if you folks had the opportunity to have them call various different cities, call you and sit down with you individually so that you can discuss the process that you're going through with more thorough so that they better understand it.
Commissioner, we certainly do that. We meet with each of the seven cities every month since this process started. So, and we have all the some of the city representatives here. We did receive a proposal from the City of Battleground this morning, and we are going to be reviewing that or what they would like to see happen as we move forward. So, I welcome that. I think the process so far have worked very well. And the cities can speak to that effect. Again, throughout this process, we are not, when I say we, staff are not dictating for the cities what to do. They're coming to the table, expressing their desires and what vision they would like, and what direction they would like to go to date, and we will get into that as we continue with the presentation. We've asked the cities what changes are they going to be making as part of the 2016 update. We have received tremendous coordination and cooperation from the cities, so I anticipate that that will continue to go. Frankly, I'm surprised that any of the cities will say that the process haven't worked very well, but I will reach out and continue to reach out to our local city partners. Like I said, this morning, we did receive a proposal from the City of Battleground, which I believe they can speak to themselves. They've shared with their council, and you will hear from them when we ask them for their input. We've also received a proposal from the City of Los Angeles on additional about 56 acres they would like to add for jobs. The other smaller cities have indicated they're not desiring to expand the boundaries, so that will be their call and not the counties.
So, Alder, with that being said, I'd like to take the opportunity to ask those from Battleground if there's something that we could do better in any of the areas as we move forward.
Sure.
If there's something that we're lacking a little bit that we messages got crossed or...
No, I think the coordination between the county and the cities has been great. They've kept us involved from day one moving forward. I think on our end, it was just kind of some miscommunication on what direction do we want to take. So it wasn't really, I don't think it has anything to do with the coordination between the county and the city.
We welcome
because not only just for Battleground, but any of the cities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you say that the staff and you meet monthly?
Yes, we meet monthly.
With the cities.
With the cities.
Yes.
Yeah. In addition, commissioners, we have staff members assigned to each city. So, in other words, there's a, for example,
city
I'm the liaison for Ridgefield. I think Jackie's the camp is the liaison for Battleground. So, each there's a staff person in our in community planning that is assigned to each city in case there's an issue or whatever. So, that's ongoing. So, all right, just
and to make sure we cover that. Is that unanimous? In other words, each city feels like you're fully supported. Is there any way that the county can do anything better to coordinate and support the city's processes in this?
Nothing new. It doesn't work at all.
It doesn't work.
I'll speak up.
It's not plugged.
So from Canvas's perspective, I echo what Sergeant said about county staff. They've been involved us early and often, and we've it's definitely a partnership approach. The state laid out the process in rough format, but that Oliver and his team reached out to us well in advance.
Great.
Right, fine.
I appreciate the opportunity to have an opportunity at the table. You know, their area in Clark County is very small, and so that's nice to be included. This is the first time, so I applaud the staff for bringing people on board this year. The center has had good support from the county staff, no problems with our proposal that we brought forward, and same thing is true with Richfield. So, but in terms of our inner workings as staff members to staff members, I think it's going very smoothly.
I think from Vancouver's perspective as well, it's been a very inclusive process, I've said, and also a very, I think, transparent and predictable one, and we appreciate how you've made your decisions in terms of the forecast and land supplies and so on. We can start getting down to some specifics.
Very good. Thank you. In terms of our what actually we expect to happen, we, as I said earlier, we do have our scoping open houses scheduled. I'll put a left-hand box there in case the our locations. That's the 19th and the 20th. That's a Wednesday and a Tuesday and a Wednesday, and the 27th, 28th are a Wednesday and a Thursday. Meetings are 7 to 8:30. We'll have most of our staff there. We'll be setting up stations with a comprehensive plan map, information on transportation, information on, we're actually going to take, Jeff's going to be out there with some information on parks since we're working on the parks master plan update. Matt's going to be out there, he said, with transportation. We'll have the built environment, environmental constraints, and people can come and talk about what they'd like to see, how we're doing planning-wise in the county, what else they'd like to see. That's the purpose. How do we, what do we want to consider when we think about a comp plan update? So.
And these open houses, if I may add, we've also invited each of the cities. If we are coming out at your locale, we want you to be there, share information with us. So they're all invited to attend all four or come to the one particular to their area.
So I assume that the primary purpose of these scoping open houses is to share what we know so far, what's foreseeable, but mainly to be able to make sure that the our citizens and the leaders of each of these cities can participate in that process, inform us so that we can all move, collaborate together, consider all that input.
That's correct.
Can I ask a question? When you say the leaders of the city, the question is followed. You say the leaders of the city, are you suggesting that you should invite the council and the city managers for each of the cities to be at these open houses? Well, certainly the invitation is there. The representatives of the cities, which are the city council members, whatever the leadership that they want to be able to, since they represent the people, to make sure that they're included in the welcome and that their input is certainly sought after.
We just haven't discussed that.
So I don't want to change the logistics of it. I just want to make sure that the all of the process includes and welcomes the representatives of the people along with the people.
Okay. Go ahead.
The rest of the schedule then, again, these are timeline subject to change, but if we get a consultant on board by, say, the 1st of September, we expect to have a draft supplemental done by December. We're proposing to hold a joint board and PC hearing on the document in January and complete the final supplemental EIS sometime in the spring. So this is our next step. Again, it's not a full-blown environmental impact statement. We're not moving, there isn't a huge amount of boundary expansion. A lot of the things we're doing are, which I'll get to in the next slide, are somewhat small scale. So that's it. Sir?
Aside from the location, the definition of the urban growth boundary, the zoning, the map, how the land use, when will that be defined? Does this SDIS include that definition, or is it provide for that definition to follow?
Glad you asked. It takes us right into the next slide. Here we go. Here's some possible alternatives. Commissioner Madore, in answer to your question. Generally, anytime you propose something, a no-action alternative is your first alternative. That is, you could do nothing. And that would be basically the plan as it is presently. So we'll discuss the fact that we would take no action. The growth boundaries would look as they are, the zoning would be as they are, the comprehensive plan designation would be as they are. A possible second alternative would be county-initiated actions. And there are a number of things we've identified as, and this is, I should, at this point, be a good time to talk about issue paper 5, which was given to you prior to the work session. There's a kind of a laundry list of things that staff has looked at and said, how can we make the comp plan better? How can we make it more understandable? Here's a couple of examples. A public facilities zoning designation. We have a parks and open space comprehensive plan designation, but there's no zone under it. And from a planning standpoint, that strikes us as a little odd. So we're gonna work up a proposal. That doesn't change the boundary, doesn't necessarily even change the zoning, but it's a planning level kind of activity. That's a map cleanup. The cleanup of the arterial atlas, which is the classification that, that you adopt that shows what the how streets and roads are classified. We have some, a couple of sub-area plans that are mentioned in the current comprehensive plan that we want to continue to work on, that being Salmon Creek and the Discovery Fairgrounds. We certainly have some rural lands possibilities that might change the landscape that we want to include. We'll get to those in a minute. So these are the these are county-initiated actions. They don't really rise to the level of huge changes, but we do want to, they do deserve mention. This would be the place to do it. Third alternative would be what the cities are asking for. So if the county has basically said, we feel as the county we don't need to expand the boundary, but the city of the center would like some additional land, the city of Battleground would like some additional land, this is where we would put a city request as an alternative.
That step number three, really, to make it more precise, would be all cities request number two. Right.
It would be option number two, which are the things we would do, yes. Plus what the cities ask for. These, again, these are alternatives. They're not. It's not one, two, three. Alternative one would be no action. Alternative two would be county-initiated actions. Alternative three would be county-initiated actions plus whatever, plus the cities. And from this, then, we'll boil these down in the SEIS to come up with a preferred alternative, and that's what we'll hold further hearings on and discussions, and you'll eventually adopt. So.
Would all the cities have to agree to the same thing with three to go along with number two for the counties?
We will certainly seek their input into whatever it is that we, the county, propose. And it'll be up to us to work with the cities in terms of their requests to make sure they fit in with your principles and values and the planning assumptions that you've directed. So, yes.
So if some of the cities were different than the city, you'd have to figure out a way to combine them or work together to get them so that they would match up to what the county wants to do.
The county, by state law, is the coordinating body. It's our role to work with the cities and to make them whole, to incorporate what it is that they want. But we're in the coordination role. So.
And to add to that, at some point, the state statute requires that the county and the city's plan be internally consistent. So it is our goal in working with the city and coordinating with them to achieve that integration and consistency. The other thing I will add is that when it comes to land use, the cities have jurisdiction within their city limits, and it's to some extent for the smaller cities what happens within the urban growth boundary. The other thing we'll be doing as staff, and you will see this at some point, is that we are also reviewing internally the existing policies and development regulations, for example. So if there are proposed policy changes or writing policy in such a way that is clear and easy to understand, we're also going to be looking at our use list to make sure that, you know, you have directed us to be more job aggressive in this plan update. We've got to look at our use list or development regulations and standards to make sure that they are job friendly, easy to use, provide some certainty. All that is going to be part of the update. It's not just map alone. You're going to be seeing changes to policies and development standards as we move forward. That's going to come to you at a later time. Yes, Commissioner.
I have a question. We've adopted some of the parameters step by step. One of those parameters was, I think, the 91,200 new jobs,
yes,
over this 20-year period. Is there opportunity for us to be able to go back and revisit some of those numbers that the cities asked us to? For instance, I get the impression that maybe the cities are saying, we're more optimistic than that, even though it was our most aggressive number. Is there provision for the cities to say, we want higher number of jobs in our city and for us to bump that number up for our guidelines?
If the cities want to plan for more jobs than they're allocated, that's fine. There's nothing stopping any city from saying, you know, we're planning, you've given us 4,000 jobs, we're going to plan for 5,000. Great. It's we're satisfying through the allocation process, the GMA requirement that we've all agreed to in terms of an allocation process. And so the cities want to plan for more, that's fine.
Yeah, so they can go above the minimum.
Which,
sure.
Which, of course, is great. We want to be able to, we welcome that. But along with that, though, is the unincorporated area of the county. When we combine all the cities plus the unincorporated area, equals some parameter that they pick, 1,200. If the cities are more optimistic than that and they want higher numbers, we certainly we welcome that, but we don't want to have a consequence of that, shrink the amount of jobs in the unincorporated area of the county. So which means if you sum all those together, that may end up being higher than our adopted number. So therefore, our adopted number might have to be bumped up in proportion to that difference.
That's correct. We always make an adjustment as we go forward. So from the city's input, we will be able to come back to the board and said, with all the requests from the cities and what we know today based on the available developable land, here's what that shows, or here's that what that looked like. If we bump the numbers up, we will share that information with the commissioners, and you can make any adjustment that you can make sometime in the future. That's really some of the intent and the purpose of looking at the three scenarios. What does this represent in terms of how the community wants to grow in the future? This is a 20-year planning horizon, which, again, the cities will tell you, you have the opportunity in the next 8 years to make adjustments if things, you know, explode, for example. You have made decisions on population. You've made decisions on jobs. We are at a point where the cities are providing us input on the direction on how they want to grow. These three scenarios, we are not really at this point making any decision one way or the other. These are just three possible scenarios of what the future will look like. So at some point, we may have to adjust the allocation paper that was prepared and you reviewed last time based on the input from the cities and what we know. You heard the city of Vancouver, for example, and other cities saying we have to truly look at the, what the true capacity is. So some of that adjustment will have to be made going forward. And you heard the city of Richfield, for example, saying that we have to make them whole. All the cities want to see that happen. They don't want to shrink their boundary. Those that want to expand their boundary, we will look at what is it that they're proposing. You hear me say often that this is like putting a puzzle together. At some point, we're going to see what that picture looks like. So we're going to come to the board and present that information and revise the allocation process, the allocation, the growth allocation as have been that you've seen before.
If I understand, I just want to make sure I understand correctly that each city, when they provide the number of jobs that they want to accommodate, they're not looking at their city limits. They're looking at their urban growth boundary, all of that area.
Yes.
And if so, it would be a good idea, I think, for us to be able to provide that real fundamental number to us. If each of the cities, if that number is anything different than what you than what we've assumed so far, to let us know early, so that we can accommodate that to ensure that we're all on the same page in providing for sufficient jobs, so we don't end up expanding there and shrinking here. We all want people to accommodate.
It's our expectation to do that, Commissioner.
Any other questions on the CEPA process? Which is what we're. So you'll see a contract probably on consent in the next couple of weeks for consultants. Like I said, the RFP process closes tomorrow. So, all right. I'll turn our attention quickly to rural lands review. Next slide. So we've had a number of work sessions, as you can see here. We talked to the board last April 3rd, a year ago, and August 20th. Next slide. This is in your handout. The decision we talked about on September 25th was to complete some ordinance work. We have some draft code language with regard to changing what the Forest 40 to Forest 20 and Ag 20 to Ag 10 might look like. We continue to work with the Food Systems Council on in their work. We talked to the when we did the work session on, in this January, the options listed here are what we put out in the rural preference census. So first option was people felt that leaving the current parcel sizes for FR40, as far as Resource 40 and Ag 20. And we're, is that one option? One option is to change minimum parcel sizes from Ag 20 to Ag 10, Forest 40 to Forest 20. That was one option. And we asked a follow-up question is, would people favor clustering? And that's basically create smaller lots and leave a larger part of the resource land as viable for resource. And the other option then was to consider changing R20 zone parcels because basically the R20, that's rural 20, have served as kind of a buffer between smaller rural parcel sizes and resource lands. So that's kind of a quick snapshot of where we've been with rural lands. Next slide. This is what we're proposing as next steps. We have complete draft code language for smaller parcel sizes on resource lands. This comes from the rural preference census. This comes from the situation assessment that Bird prepared when we had them under contract. We need to update that document to show the results of the 2012 USDA farm census. Because the information was there was, as we know, stopped in 2007, and that information is now out.
And that information confirmed the smaller.
Correct.
Comments,
correct.
Smaller.
That's correct. Draft code language on rural plan use unit developments. Again, it says comp plan. We're thinking about doing this in terms of the comp plan update, as opposed to having it for you next week. That's why it says comp plan here. Complete draft code language on moving lot reconfigurations. That was one that you haven't heard about, but lot reconfigurations are in the resource land section, but they really deal with non-conforming lots, so we figured just take that section out, put it in the non-conforming lot section. That's a code cleanup. And then updating the our farm information based on the latest Department of Agriculture Farm Census report. So those are kind of our next steps with regard to rural lands. So next slide. Any questions on that?
Can you give us a copy as you go with the drafts for step one or item one and two, so they can at least keep me informed?
Sure. The last issue we wanted to present was we've been getting a lot of information from that Commissioner Dorr has been forwarding us on information his office has been receiving from Clark County Citizens United about the comprehensive plan and how it was put together in 1994. And the idea here was to say, we set Jose loose, was to go back and research the record and find out sort of what actually happened, how resource land was designated, how parcel sizes were designated. This is probably a too condensed summary, but we've prepared a memo that I think has been sent from Oliver, which kind of explains what happened in 1994 in terms of the first comprehensive plan that we had was adopted that year under growth management, what was appealed, what happened to those appeals, what the hearings board decisions were, what the court of appeals decisions were, and just so you'd have that background in terms of the record. We were required to adopt resource land designations by 1991. The county set those designations in 1994. The resource designations for ag and forest lands and minimum parcel size were appealed. Again, the memo has more details. County decisions upheld the Growth Management Act Hearings Board and Superior Courts in 1995 and 1997. We were ruled in compliance with the GMA, and I think that's the key takeaway.
The county decisions were upheld by the GMHB and Superior
Correct.
Court.
Right.
It's not the county upheld.
No.
Those.
The county made decisions that were.
Yes.
And then also importantly is that in 2004 and 2007, the board adopted a comprehensive plan map that left those designations and parcel sizes in place. So there's been two opportunities since the 1994 plan and its appeals to make changes. And again, the last bullet there, we've prepared the memo, which you should have summarizing the background of that process. So
the only thing staff will add is that in that memo, we did our best to include all the exhibits By that I mean the growth board rulings, the court rulings. So all that is included in the memo that staff put together. And the reason we did that is to at least bring the board up to speed as to what has happened, decisions that have already been litigated, and decisions made by the court throughout this process or through the 2016 update. We don't intend to revisit issues that the court have already said is done and done with. So that's really my ask, that I don't want to go reopen issues that the courts and the growth board have already decided on.
Anybody, Oliver, the questions, the president's plan, are they provided a copy of the framework that you just pointed out so that they understand how this process worked the whole time?
That's true, Commissioner. We developed a website for the 20 devoted to the 2016 plan update. So all this information is being put on our website. Every document and every information that we present to the commissioners at the work session or before your hearing are put on the commissioners' grid. So the information is there and available for the public, and we welcome and we are encouraging folks to get involved. On our website, we have a section devoted to how people can get involved, submit comment to us, call us, and you know, whatever the information may be, that's there online to how people can get involved. And as we mentioned, we are going out in August to have these four open houses. So there are opportunities. The board adopted a public participation program which outlined what we are going to be doing and how people can get involved and participate throughout the process. So to answer your question, yes.
About every other commission meeting or so, the same group of people show up and make comments on that. And I'm just wondering if somehow we made sure that the next time they show up that you actually present them a copy of the written document at the commission meeting.
We can do that. Yeah, because this is good information, and it was interesting to go back and read the record for those of us that weren't here, and to find out what actually happened. And so,
yeah, and staff on a daily basis, we are making ourselves available. After they come and make comment to you, I come up many a time and ask them to set up a meeting. Come and meet with us. Let's understand what their issues are and how we can be very responsive.
Thank you.
That concludes the staff presentation. If there's any questions, are there any questions, I guess?
Point of keeping up. Today, I'm still of the understanding that CAMAS has required or requested a reduction of our urban growth boundary.
No.
You've taken something out.
No, we've maintained consistent that we're fine with what we've had, and we don't need to expand or reduce.
Was it Washougal?
Washougal may have lost some land, but unfortunately, Mr.
No, that was from the 2007.
Yes.
Washougal lost some land because through the litigation and appeals of the 2007 comp plan. The very last ruling was that a certain area that had been de-designated from agriculture had been improperly de-designated.
So that was from the previous.
That was from 2007. Yes,
so the
sir.
Current plan, they're not asking for any change.
The only folks that we've heard from that have asked for small expansions are Battleground and Richfield.
La Center.
La Center. I think you're still asking for the stuff on the other side of the I-5.
55 acres. Yeah.
What was the expansion of La Center's urban growth boundary in the last comprehensive plan? How many acres?
In the last comprehensive plan, the 2007 plan, La Center had an additional 608 acres that was taken out as a result of the growth decisions, and so we lost over 400, almost 500 acres of industrial land and some multifamily land as well.
And you ended up with what?
but some land was added also.
What land was added?
Well, in 2004, if you look at 2004 and 2007, there was land added to the La Center Urban Growth Boundary to extend it to the to I-5.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I want to, just to reaffirm this board's commitment to that we officially adopted that we will not shrink the urban growth boundary because the cities have expressed that concern because they've invested in infrastructure inside that boundary. And so that we're good with that. We're going to make sure that we will not shrink it unless you specifically ask us to do so. And anything, so it either stays the same or will increase according to what the wishes are for each of the cities.
That's correct, and that's why we have a separate slide on the potential options, city requests. That's where that will show up.
All right. Anything else? Any questions? Any clarification? Misunderstanding? All right. We'll move forward, and thank everybody for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.